So this year, during our liturgy, we will be hearing from the gospel that we say is according to Mark. And our reading today is taken from the very first lines of the gospel. All of the gospels, the four gospels, are all anonymous. We don't know, there's no author that is claimed for any of them. And yet, from the second century, there is a tradition that is assigned the most likely author of each of these. And so Mark, or John Mark, has been given to us as the likely author of this gospel. Now, from about the third century, it was believed or understood Matthew's gospel was the one that was first read. And so it was often presented, as it is in our canon, when we open the opening pages of the New Testament. It's the gospel of Matthew that we're presented with. And so it was believed that Mark was simply a summary of the gospel of Matthew. But now, in over the last century or so, scholarship has improved and we've worked out, no. Mark was the first of the Gospels to be written, probably in Rome, and probably just after the period of persecution by the Emperor Nero. So around the year 66, when people like Peter and Paul were put to death by the Empire. And so the early church leaders, who initially were thinking that Jesus would return very soon, realizing that, no, maybe he won't. And maybe now that the first leaders, the first disciples, the first apostles were all going to their deaths, were all no longer available to tell their own story, Mark must have thought, hey, we need to capture this. We need to write down the story of Jesus so that followers in the years afterwards, thankfully for us, you know, we will be able to hear the story of Jesus. And so he takes all of the many stories that are available, you know, many of the different stories. Different people would have remembered one story, one telling, one parable that Jesus told. Someone else would have remembered this miracle story. So he has all of these different stories, and of course his own experience of these things, that he was there for some of these events. And he begins to write this story, you know, pouring out our own attempt, you know, to be able to capture that experience of who Jesus is. I mean, the gift of the Gospel of Mark is that it's relatively short, you know, and it's worth sitting down one day and actually just sitting with it and reading it from the beginning to end. It'll take about an hour and a half, depending on how quickly you read. And it's worth doing because you get the sense of the urgency, the expectancy, the action that is here in the Gospel of Mark. You know, other Gospels will focus more on the teaching and the words of Jesus. But Mark is more interested in telling us simply the story, the bare bones story. And there's this breathless quality that we get in this Gospel. It's like a child who has just gone and experienced something wonderful. And they come back and tell you and they're like, and this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. It's punctuated, this Gospel, by this, in the Greek word is euthos. And it's the word that's often translated immediately. This sense that this happened and then immediately Jesus was doing this. Like the first chapter gives us a little precis of, you know, a day in the life of Jesus. And it's just this action-packed encounter with the Son of the living God. The opening line that we have today gives us Mark's understanding of who Jesus is. This is the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. And he's told us this is who he believes that Jesus is. But from this point on, he's not going to offer any more commentary. He's going to let the action tell the story for us. He's going to let us make up our own mind. And for the next eight chapters, which is set up in Galilee, that's this question that is underlying the text. Who is this man? It's a question that's on a lot of people's lips. That they're pondering. You know, he's doing these mighty deeds. He's forgiving sins. He's healing people. He's teaching people. Who is he? And this question of, is he the Messiah? And that comes to a climax in the end of chapter 8 through to chapter 10, when the action moves from Galilee into the very north of Israel, up towards Caesarea Philippi. And there this other question is put to the disciples. Who do people say that I am? It's this question that is there. And then there's this very brief journey story as they move from Galilee down towards Jerusalem. And then from chapter 11, we're in Jerusalem in the final week of the ministry of Jesus through, of course, to chapter 16. So 14, 15 are the story of the Passion, the Last Supper, all of those events in that final night. The only night when Jesus is actually in Jerusalem. Other times he comes and goes, but this final night in Jerusalem. And then this brief, very abrupt story of the resurrection of Jesus in Mark 16, verses 1 to 8, which is where the gospel just kind of stops. There's no real conclusion like the other gospels have. And scribes thought, what's going on here? Mark doesn't seem to finish this story. There's no great finale. There's no great ending. A summary statement like in the end of John 20, where he says, all of these things were written so that you might believe that Jesus is the Son of God. No, Mark seems to want us to know that the story's not finished. We need to continue telling the story ourselves. We need to live this story out in our own lives. We need to encounter Jesus in our own way. We need to look at the evidence that we get from sitting down and reading his account and seeing what impact that has. How does it form us? How does it shape us? How does it answer that question of our own lives? Who is this man? Is he the Messiah? And how does he become the king? We can also answer ourselves. Other scribes said, that's not nearly adequate enough, and tacked on a couple of other endings. So when you read your scriptures, you'll see little bits in brackets and all of that later additions or later endings to the gospel. But it begins with this call, this reminder of what we heard in our first reading from the 40th chapter of the prophet Isaiah. That begins this whole new section in the book of Isaiah. And the first part, the first 39 chapters of Isaiah, were written maybe a century or so or up to the period of the exile in the 6th century BC. But now in chapter 40, clearly the exile is something that has happened. People are there up in Babylon. They're away from the Holy Land. They're away from the land of the promise. And so the prophet's message changes dramatically and radically to this call to comfort my people, comfort them. And there's this tenderness, this intimacy that God expresses. The first 39 chapters of Isaiah, there's so much about judgment and condemnation because the people still have a chance of being redeemed, of changing their ways, but they don't. But now in chapter 40, there's this change to this consolation, this desire of God to call us into ourselves, to call us back into life. And when we get to the ministry of John the Baptist, he's doing something similar, taking people away from the temple. We don't get his backstory in Mark's gospel, but in the gospel of Luke, we do. We're told that Zechariah is a priest in the temple. And so John presumably grew up around the temple, grew up, in that sense of being in service at the temple. But instead, he doesn't try and call people to life there. He takes them away, takes them down into the deep Jordan Valley to find their life there. The Jordan is, of course, significant because it's the place where the people being led by Moses, who reaches the shore, and then Joshua, the next generation that has to lead the people through the waters of the Jordan into the Promised Land. And then when they return from the exile, 800 years later, are led back through the rivers, the waters of the Jordan to retake possession of the Promised Land. But John is pointing out that movement from being in exile to returning to the land of the promise, that's a process. It doesn't just happen in one instance. And John is pointing out that the people still need to turn. They need to change their ways. They need to have that metanoia, that repentance, the changing of our minds, the reorientation of our lives. And so he takes them into the wilderness so that they can encounter this need. We all have that need. We all have that longing to make sense of our lives, to find the fullness in God, to allow God to invite us once again back into life. And during the season of Advent, it's a crazy time of the year. There's just so much pressure and so many things that are starting to happen around us. But finding that space, making some space in our lives just to sit with God, just to let him love us, to let him call us and invite us back into life again, and to allow God to nurture us, to tenderly speak to us as Isaiah does to the returning exiles, to invite us deeper into the life of union with God. It's the only way to find life, the only way that we will experience and encounter God, so that then we can be that source of life and goodness to our family and friends that we encounter during these holy days.